MacCast, Sunday, January 6th, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Happy New Year. Hopefully things have started off great for you. Things are going well here at MacCast HQ, which is my spare bedroom in my house where I am recording from, and I have been for a few years now. So welcome. Glad to have you here with me for another episode, another year, another season, I guess. We don't really have seasons here on the MacCast. We've just been doing this thing for a really, really long time. But I'm glad to be have you back here with me. And we have a few things to talk about this week here on the MacCast. Not a ton of stuff. Again, it's still kind of slow as we're waiting for kind of spring things to happen. But there was kind of a big bit of Apple news with regards to iPhone sales and Apple guidance. So we're going to get into that in this episode, talk about maybe what the future of Apple is going to look like. We've got some new updates on AirPower and what might be happening with that. Yeah, it might not be dead yet. Also, smart TV stuff coming out of CES from an unlikely source, one of Apple's partners, and Apple themselves as well. And then we have some rumors about what we might see in the next iPhone. And then we're going to get to some of your feedback, talk a little bit more about DVDs and DVD drives, and dig into some more hidden user interface stuff. And that's going to round out this episode of the MacCast. So I want to jump right into things, but before we get to it, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is Ops Genie by Atlassian. You know, when your favorite website or service goes down, even for just a moment, it gets extremely frustrating. Something like Amazon or Netflix or, God forbid, iCloud. Yeah, it impacts us and it makes us not too happy. I know I don't like it when I can't access iCloud or my Apple Mail even for a moment. And that unhappiness, though, is really nothing compared to the impact it has on those businesses. But luckily for companies, they have dev and ops people to be there to jump in when these outages happen. And they save us from these outages, get things back up and running quickly. And luckily for those folks, there is Ops Genie from Atlassian. Because if you're an ops or dev team person, your job is to respond quickly and efficiently to those incidents. And for that, you need a tool like Ops Genie on your utility belt. Ops Genie gives your team the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues. It helps notify the right people through a smart combination of scheduling and escalation paths that take into account things like time zones and holidays. And Ops Genie allows for deep flexibility in how, when, and where your alerts are deployed. And it's supported by over 200 integrations like Jira, Amazon CloudWatch, Datadog, New Relic, and more. And best of all, it tracks all of that activity and can provide useful insights to help you improve future incident responses. With Ops Genie, your next incident doesn't stand a chance. Just visit opsgenie.com and you can sign up for a free company account and add up to 5 team members. Never miss a critical alert with Ops Genie, opsgenie.com, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. Well, if you were following Apple news this week, you know it was not a great week for Apple or Tim Cook when it comes to their financials. Tim Cook posted a letter to investors on Apple's website this week, revising their first quarter 2019 guidance. That's their holiday quarter, usually their biggest and best quarter of the year. They revised that guidance estimate down about $5 billion on the lower end of the scale to $84 billion. And that caused quite a ruckus, as you might imagine. As to why they were doing that, he basically cited economic weaknesses in some emerging markets and claimed that they are having significantly greater impact than Apple originally projected. So mostly they mean China at this point, and that was later confirmed in an interview. The note also said that the timing of product releases, the strong U.S. dollar, and supply constraints caused fewer than expected iPhone upgrades, and that was also cited as a contributing factor to the lowering of Apple's guidance. And essentially what they're saying is they were caught off guard by the slowing economy in China. Not really caught off guard, but it was more impactful than they had expected. And also that concerns over U.S. tariffs were causing uncertainties, and that's causing Apple to have to revise this guidance. I don't think that completely explains the whole picture behind what was going on. I think that second half that Tim Cook talked about, the fact that just overall, all of these factors were going to impact iPhone sales and Apple seeing fewer than expected iPhone sales. And again, I have to admit, you know, I didn't want to believe it, but this is what a lot of the rumors were talking about, that just Apple was not selling as many iPhones this quarter as they had in years past. And so I think there's just a lot of complexity tied up in all of that other stuff. And these are a lot of the factors that we had been talking about. I think the complexity comes into play. Yes, Apple has issues in emerging markets with their products, specifically China, for all those reasons cited, but also iPhones are getting more expensive. And I think across the board, the consumers and the economy are reacting to that. And I think that it's not surprising. I also think things like just the number of new and improved features and just iPhones being exciting to consumers, we're not seeing as much improvement from generation to generation, and consumers respond to that. You fall into this pattern, and we've talked about it a lot on the MacCast, where you just don't need to upgrade. You know, that camera, it's got some nice new features, but for the price you're going to have to pay, maybe it's not worth it to you. And I think a lot of consumers are reacting like that. And add to that the higher price points. Apple has pushed up the premium phones up over $1,000. That is a big investment for a lot of people. And if you don't feel like you're getting a huge benefit out of that, you're going to hold off. The thing is I don't think any of these things are huge surprises to Apple. I think they were expecting it. I think what we're hearing now, though, is they just weren't expecting the reactions to be as great as they ended up being. And also, I think another big factor is just Apple doing a great job with the release of iOS 12 in improving the performance of older models, allowing consumers to keep those models longer. You know, it's a really great upgrade even on older devices. And one of the things Tim Cook did mention was that Apple's $29 battery replacement program for older models is a contributing factor in all of this as well, meaning that consumers are opting to hold on to their older devices longer and aren't really upgrading to new devices. So I think this is kind of the new norm, and I think Apple's going to be a lot more conservative about their guidance in the future. Obviously, that is not helping them on the stock front or with analysts. They are reacting pretty negatively to this news, as was reflected in Apple's stock price this week. If you had been following it at all, it, you know, literally plummeted. So, you know, this is kind of a big deal. All that said, there does seem to be some evidence that, at least in the U.S., iPhone is doing all right. It's actually doing not too bad. And that seems to back up the statements that Tim Cook made, saying that really where a lot of the negative impact is coming from on iPhone sales is in these emerging markets. He said in a memo to employees following the public letter to investors that, quote, iPhone activations in the U.S. and Canada set new records on Christmas Day. And that statement seems to be backed up by some data from Localytics, who looks at holiday activations of iPhones, and they showed that they were very strong, particularly with the iPhone XR, stating that the iPhone XR activations were up 88% over the holiday period. That's versus the 3 weeks prior average activations. And they said that more new device activations were done over the Black Friday weekend on iPhone XR than any other device. So that's good news. They also showed that some of Apple's other products were doing very well. Sixth generation iPad activations were up 219%. iPad Pro 11-inch activations were up 125% over the Black Friday weekend. And 12.9-inch iPads were up 99%. And surprisingly in their numbers, iPad Mini 4 activations were also up 108%. So people still going for that iPad Mini 4, which if you remember, we heard last episode that it's sounding like Apple is planning on releasing an iPad Mini 5 update sometime this spring. So still a big market for the iPad Mini, and I think numbers like that prove that consumers are going to respond pretty positively to that when it comes out. But still, despite the good lift in numbers in terms of activations, Apple's older devices like iPhone 7, iPhone 6S, and iPhone 10, they showed in the Localytics data the strongest overall mix of iPhones being activated over the holiday season. So people still opting for those older iPhone models at, you know, more affordable price points. And I think that's really not surprising. Now, I want to get to, because this is related, the MacCast poll that I asked you to participate in, really an unofficial kind of question of the MacCast community. And I got a lot of responses from people about whether or not you upgraded to iPhone this year. You upgraded your iPhones this year. And if so, what models were you going for? And I was frankly surprised by the numbers. A lot of you are upgrading. Now, our audience sample is likely skewed a little bit. Of course, MacCast listeners tend to be, you know, big iPhone fans, and a lot of us are early adopters. So take this with a grain of salt, but it does seem like a lot of you did upgrade your iPhones this year. Although I will tell you, I heard mostly from those of you with older iPhone models, specifically the iPhone 7. It seemed like most owners of iPhone 7s did their upgrade this year and opted to go with 10S series models on the whole, with a few of you opting for the iPhone XR. And I was really surprised to see that iPhone XS Max wasn't as strong in our community as upgrades to the iPhone XS. So I don't know if that means that a lot of you are like me and aren't big fans of the Gigantophones or what it might be. I also heard from quite a few people who upgraded to the iPhone 8. That was another popular model within our community. So that was really interesting to see. I also heard from a number of people who didn't upgrade, and across the board, it seemed to be those of you who were on an iPhone 10 or maybe an iPhone 8 that you purchased last year, and you decided that you were fairly happy to stick with what you have and wait another year, see what Apple does this year before you upgrade. But overall, I would say, again, the data within our community seems to support Apple's theory that people are upgrading to iPhone, but maybe just not as strongly as they have in years past. And again, I think this is going to be kind of the new norm, is a lot of folks, instead of upgrading every year, even us early adopters or huge Apple fans, we're going to be falling back to a 2 or 3 year upgrade cycle. And Apple is going to have to handle that transition period in some way. And this is nothing new. We've gone through this with Apple products in the past. If you look at when iPod matured, Apple had to deal with the same sorts of issues before iPhone came along, you know, the next big thing. So the question becomes, what is Apple going to do until we get to the next big thing? And when is the next big thing? And probably for a lot of you, what you're wanting to know is, what is the next big thing? I have my own personal theories. I think it's going to be something related to AR and VR, whether it's glasses, whether it's some other product. I really don't know what that is going to be. I have a feeling it is going to be more in the wearable space. I have long had the running theory that we're going to be moving away from screens in general, or at least screens as we know them, displays, you know, something that we hold in our hand or have on our wrist. It's going to be more something that is placed in front of us in some way. And whether that's, you know, laser projections onto the retina through some sort of device that you wear on your face or some other thing, I think that's probably going to be it. There's going to be a combination, and it will be some sort of maybe wearable device that is actually driving that, whether that's the thing in your pocket that used to be an iPhone, the thing on your wrist that's an Apple Watch. I really don't know. I think we're a few years away from that, though. So how do we get through with, you know, mature iPhone products? I think, again, people are going to be continuing to purchase iPhones. Apple's still going to be releasing exciting new upgrades in terms of iPhone, but I think the upgrade cycle is going to slow there. So what's the transitional thing to get us between? I think really services is what Apple is turning toward. And we've seen so much services growth over the past year with Apple Music, with iCloud services, and Apple is planning to add to that in 2019 with their new video service. And I really think that's going to have to be the thing that is going to need to pick up the slack. And that is a tall order for Apple. And can they pull that off? I think that's where the big question lies, and where a lot of the uncertainty is coming around. But Apple did announce with services that, you know, things like the App Store did very, very well over the holiday season. As a matter of fact, they set a new worldwide spending record for the App Store over the holidays. Consumers did, that is. And App Store purchases were 1.22 billion between Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve this year. And as a matter of fact, on New Year's Day, the App Store saw $322 million in purchases, which was a new single day record for Apple. So that doing very well. But they are going to need to figure out how to make revenue from their video streaming service. And, you know, the whole idea we've been hearing is that they're going to release that as a free product for owners of Apple devices. So if you have an Apple TV, you have an iPad, an iPhone, you're going to get access to Apple's video content for free. And then they are going to upsell you on premium services and channels like HBO and Showtime. Of course, that means, as far as I know, that they're going to be relying on in-app or in-channel subscription revenue, you know, the ability to sign up for those services from within Apple's TV app and using presumably, you know, something like Apple Pay or tying into your iTunes Apple ID. And we know from the news last week that Apple lost Netflix when it came to that subscription revenue, at least for new subscribers. And we heard some data this week from Sensor Tower about what the value of those subscriptions were to Apple. And I was pretty shocked. They say Apple was making about $21 million a month in revenue from Netflix. Now, that's not all going away overnight, because those people who are already signed up are going to be able to continue on that plan, but Apple is not going to be bringing on new consumers with that revenue. And that's the kind of revenue they're going to have to go after if the video service is going to kind of, again, pick up the slack with slowing iPhone sales. I think the potential is there for it to be a huge product, and I think Apple's going to have to get creative in how they leverage that. And I think they will. I think you're going to hear a little bit later in this episode that they're already moving and thinking in that direction. So, you know, is Apple doomed? I don't think so. I think they're going to come out just fine. They are going through a rough patch at the moment, though. I think no doubt, again, if you've watched Apple's stock price over the past week or two. So what's happening with Apple's AirPower wireless charging, Matt? We know that they announced it in 2017 at Worldwide Developer Conference. They said it would be here in 2018. We're sitting here in 2019, and of course, you can't walk into an Apple store and buy an AirPower mat. So it didn't show up. It's not here. I myself had written it off. I basically felt like Apple had created vaporware, but it's looking like now there's some people, some folks, trusted members of this community who are saying this little product, it might be the little product that could. It is likely going to show up. Developer Steve Trotton Smith, claimed on Twitter that his little birdies are saying that Apple has gotten past their issues with the product and could be getting ready to release it soon. We had heard that part of the problem was a heat issue that Apple was dealing with all the charging coils in that compact a configuration, and supposedly now they have worked through that, and it might actually show up this spring. Ming-Chi Kuo had told his investors in a note that Apple may launch the AirPower in, quote, late fourth quarter of 2018, which we know didn't happen now, or early first quarter of 2019. So hey, if you've been waiting for that product, you may still get a chance to buy it. And there's also the assumption that we will get Apple's AirPod wireless charging case, the optional case, around the same time. It's rumored that's going to be about $70 US to buy that, and that'll allow you to charge your iPhones, your AirPods with the new charging case, and your third generation or later Apple Watch all on the same charging mat. Now, if you don't want to wait for that, I was on the iOS show this week, and Jeff Gamet made his pick a Nomad product that actually mimics a lot of the functionality of the AirPower mat. Now, it's a little bit different in that the mat part has three charging coils like the AirPower mat, but it is exclusively for Qi devices like your iPhone, and there's actually a separate little pop-up integrated spot for your Apple Watch. But all of the connectors and charging coils are built in, so you don't have to use your current Apple Watch charging puck, and you should be able to charge multiple devices on the pad, including your new AirPods, if and when Apple releases the wireless charging case. So if you're looking for an alternative, you might check that out. Currently sold out, though, on the Nomad website. The product is called the Base Station Apple Watch Edition, and you can sign up to be emailed when it becomes available again. It retails for $119.95 US. So you can either grab that and try and grab that now or when it becomes available, or wait till maybe this spring and get that AirPower wireless charging mat from Apple. Another product we've been talking about recently that is rumored to be coming out is Apple's smart battery case for the iPhone XS series. We've been hearing inklings and rumors about this. Now we're starting to see a little bit of evidence that it might actually happen. What happened this week is a Reddit user actually trimmed down his smart battery case for his iPhone 7 and fit it to his iPhone 10. And when he did so, an interesting icon showed up on his phone running iOS 12.1.2. That icon did not look like the smart battery case that we currently know. It showed an icon that seemed to indicate a new design, still with a lightning connector, but no chin on the bottom of it. So it's assumed this is the icon for the upcoming iPhone XS series case. It's not definitive proof, but you might remember that we heard that Apple is prepping a new leather battery case for the iPhone XS series, And again, this just seems to be further evidence that that product might be coming. So if you're looking for an Apple-branded battery case for your iPhone XS or XS Plus, that might be another product that could show up in Apple's stores sometime soon. Guess what? iTunes is coming to your television, or at least if you have a Samsung television. Yeah, not an Apple-branded TV, but actually a smart TV, and Samsung and maybe some other smart TVs. Samsung this week announced, I believe at CES, that they are going to offer iTunes movies and TV shows as well as Apple AirPlay 2 support on 2019 Samsung smart TV models beginning this spring. That announcement was followed up by an announcement from Apple saying that leading TV manufacturers are also going to include AirPlay 2 support on their TVs. They even updated their AirPlay 2 site on Apple.com to show some examples of the lock screen and control center interface for AirPlay 2 working with smart television sets. And the good news is this means that smart TVs will also support Siri and HomeKit integration, meaning that you can send video using your voice with Siri and HomeKit. Send that right over to your television set without an Apple TV box, without anything extra, if you have a smart TV that supports this. And you might go, what is Apple doing? This seems very un-Apple-like. But if you think back to the story we were talking about earlier, that Apple sort of doubling down on services and getting their services in as many places as possible, this starts to make sense. It starts to remind me a little bit, again, of what Apple did with the iPod. As iPod sales started to slow and things matured, you remember they released iTunes for Windows, and that seemed like an odd play. Apple TV or iTunes for smart TVs, including Samsung smart TV, feels very similar to me in that way. And it's all about getting Apple's content on as many devices and in as many places as possible, because they want to sell and deliver that content and those services to as broad an audience as possible. And, you know, there's also often crossover when this happens, right? When people start to experience Apple TVs and iTunes products and services in more places, they tend to think about upgrading to Apple devices the next time they need an upgrade, and you get that whole halo effect going on. So I think this is a interesting play by Apple. I think it's likely a smart play by Apple. It historically seems to have worked out for them in the past. The question then becomes, what about the experience? Because going back to that other analogy of iTunes on Windows, it wasn't the greatest experience. And I'm curious to see how iTunes on a smart TV works out. I think AirPlay 2 is going to be fine. We've seen that on other third-party speaker products like the Sonos, and it's pretty great experience. So as long as the experience is good enough, I think it ultimately is going to help Apple in the long run, especially, again, when it comes to selling their content and their products and their services products, into other ecosystems. So, we'll have to wait and see how this plays out, but looks like it's going to be rolling out on Samsung and other smart TVs this spring. And then finally in the news for this week, it feels almost too early to be talking about the next iPhone, but here we are, it's 2019, and we're already starting to get the first rumors about what we could expect in a 2019 iPhone, and believe it or not, three camera lenses. Yep, if two camera lenses are good, I guess three must be better? I don't know. Actually, when you see the renders of this thing, if you've been online or after you hear this episode, just Google for this, and you may not think it's actually better, because forget about that little camera bump. We're talking about a camera postage stamp, actually much larger than a postage stamp, a big old square wart on the back of your iPhone. Luckily, these renders are early designs. They're supposedly from possible engineering validation testing designs, which just means the stuff that Apple's going through and playing around with. You know, when we're this early in the cycle, Apple is looking at all different kinds of possibilities for new features in iPhones. And what you see at this point is probably not what you're ultimately going to get, at least in terms of design. In terms of features, though, we could see a tri-lens system on an iPhone. We've seen it on other devices, so it's not out of the realm of possibility. This information is coming from OnLeaks and Digit, and OnLeaks has been a somewhat reliable source of rumors in the past. So what's going on here? It may be the kind of platform Apple is looking to use for the time-of-flight depth mapping camera system from Sony that we talked about a little bit last week. I will tell you again, the renders, in my opinion, are really pretty ugly and gross. So hopefully that's not what it ultimately looks like. I don't think Apple would release this style of product, but again, had you told me they were going to do a camera bump at all at any point, I probably would have told you no to that as well. So I guess nothing's out of the realm of possibility. I'd rather they just make the device a little bit thicker, put a little bit more battery in there, as a lot of us, I think, would, and make it flat, right? I'll take a couple extra millimeters of thickness if I don't have to have a camera cracker, I guess is probably the better way to describe this thing. Again, if you haven't seen it, Google for the pictures, 2019 iPhone tri-lens system, and it'll probably pop right up. But as far as other rumors for a future iPhone, there's at least one analyst over at Atherton Research who believes that 2019 iPhones will finally ditch the Lightning connector in favor of the USB-C connector. I think that's likely to happen, especially given the fact that we saw USB-C connectors come to the iPad Pros this year. Also saying Apple will have a smaller notch. I think that's something they could go for as well. Although we have been hearing rumors that they might be looking at some of these what are called punch hole designs, where you simply just have a hole cut out in the LCD display. I don't know which I like better. If I'm more sort of amicable to the notch or the punch hole. I think the punch hole looks a little bit weird. Like, if you're going to have something there, you might as well make it obvious and a design choice, as opposed to the, to me, the punch hole almost just looks like an afterthought. Like, oh, well, we got to have a place for the camera to go through, so let's just put a little hole in the display. And I think it's even more distracting maybe than the notch. I don't know. To me, they all kind of fade away in day-to-day usage anyway. The notch has never been a big frustration to me at all, although I know there are people out there who absolutely hate it. Now, the one other rumor that is in this analyst report is that Apple will move away from Face ID and go to Touch ID in the display. That was something we had heard rumored about before we got Face ID. I don't think that's going to happen. I highly doubt that Apple is going to give up Face ID at this point and roll back to Touch ID, even if it exists under the display. I've seen this on other devices, and you still have a specific touch area that you have to touch on the device. I don't think it's any better than Face ID, and I think Face ID has already proven itself as a good, viable technology. Apple's improved it with the iPad Pro and the latest iPhones, and I think they're just going to continue to make enhancements and improvements to Face ID. And again, I think we're done with fingerprints moving forward. But, you know, you never know. I might be wrong. What do you think? Face ID, Touch ID moving forward? If they could put it under the display, would you want them to move back to that? Or are you totally happy with Face ID? Shoot me some feedback, maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that sponsor is Upstart. Look, applying for a loan is a lot like applying for a job that you don't get to do an interview for. Instead, loan companies make their decisions based on your credit score and history without really getting to know the whole you. Now, thanks to Upstart.com, it never has to be that way again. Upstart Upstart is revolutionizing the way you borrow money by rewarding you for your job experience, your education, in the form of a smarter interest rate. And I have to tell you, you know, coming out of college, I did not make wise financial choices. I had racked up a bunch of credit card debt, and that took me years to pay off. It would have been really nice to have the opportunity to try Upstart, and in doing so, I might have been able to pay off my debt a lot sooner. Because unlike traditional credit underwriting, which could be biased against people with a short credit history, Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. Upstart believes that you are more than just your credit score, and they make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in less than 2 minutes, all without affecting your credit score. Best part, once your loan is approved, the funds will be transferred to you the very next business day. The next day, you'll have your cash. Over 100,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, fund their weddings, or to make large purchases. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. Hurry to upstart.com/MacCast to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes and it won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/MacCast. And a big thank you to Upstart for their support of the show. On the last episode, we spoke a little bit about ways to still burn and watch DVDs with your current Mac. As you know, most Macs these days, or I think all the ones shipping these days, really, don't come with any kind of optical drive. And they actually haven't had optical drives for a while. So if you want to be able to do that, what you need to do is buy an external DVD drive. And we talked about external DVD drives, and I need to make a small correction to something that I said on the last episode of the MacCast. And that was, I mentioned that one disadvantage of having a non-Apple external drive, a non-Apple super drive, was that you wouldn't be able to use Apple's built-in DVD player, that it wouldn't work for playing back your DVDs. And I even recommended that you use an alternative app like Video LAN Client, like VLC. Well, quite a few MacCast listeners wrote in to say, hey, Adam, that's not exactly correct. I actually have a third-party DVD player, and it works perfectly fine with Apple's DVD application. I put the disc in, it shows up and gives me the option to launch Apple's DVD player. I think a few folks mentioned they do have to pick region encoding the first time that it launches, but beyond that, you're good to go, and you can play back your DVDs just fine. I don't remember it being that way back in the day. So I don't know if Apple changed it at some point. I got my information specifically from MacSales.com, OWC, and their optical drive page. When you buy an optical drive on their site, external USB drive, they actually warn you of this same issue. So I think it used to be in the past where it would not work. As a matter of fact, I had an external Apple SuperDrive that I put into an external enclosure after I took it out of my MacBook Pro, my 2011 MacBook Pro, and I even had to do some hacking back in the day to get it recognized by the DVD player app. So good if Apple has actually changed that, probably recognizing the fact that some people still want to be able to burn and use DVDs, and because they don't have them built in anymore, and Apple doesn't really sell a super drive outside of the one external USB model, that, you know, people needed more support. So good news is it sounds like you can buy a third-party DVD drive. As a matter of fact, because of people in the community emailing me, I went ahead and ordered this week a $27 LG DVD USB drive to test out. So it should be arriving from Amazon tomorrow, and I will test it out and report back to you my personal experience with using an external DVD drive on a Mac in 2019. I almost said 2018, and let you know how it goes. If I run into any issues and what those might be, and we'll carry this conversation on, because I am really curious to see how the experience is now versus what I remember from a few years ago. So if you want to chime in on this conversation, you're more than welcome to shoot me some emails or audio feedback. Send that to maccast@gmail.com. And like I said, we don't have a lot for you in this episode, so I'm going to round things out with probably a healthy conversation, diving more, even deeper into our tips and tricks about hidden user interface elements in Mac and iOS. I think we're going to be sticking to Apple Watch and iOS this week. But, you know, we've been talking a lot about these hidden user interface elements, and Dan wrote in with one for the Apple Watch, and specifically for Apple's calendar application on the Apple Watch. He noted that when you tap the Apple calendar complication on the front of your watch, it takes you into a view with the word today in the upper left-hand corner. And there's actually three different options of views in here. But what Dan told me was that if you tap the word today, you will actually get switched into a month view with the current day highlighted. So you can actually see a full month calendar just for the current month. And if you tap that again, it'll drop you right back to the today interface on your Apple Watch. So you really can't do anything navigationally on that screen, the month screen, but you do get that month view. And I thought that was pretty cool. But when I went to try it on my own Apple Watch, I actually couldn't get it to work. No matter what I would do, tapping on the word today did absolutely nothing. And that turns out the reason for that is because there's actually three different view options for that view. And in order to switch between them, you also have to access one of the little hidden interfaces that is often on the Apple Watch, which is the force press. So by force pressing on that view, I could see that I had three different options, and luckily for a couple of them, there's actually a hint for Dan's little trick. So it's an almost hidden UI, I think I'm going to call this one. And it actually, this brings up a good thing to point out, because there occasionally is some hints within watchOS and iOS to indicate where you might have additional options when tapping on something. So the first thing you need to do if this tip is not working for you is force press on the screen, and you should get that list of options. And for views for the calendar, you have a list view, you have a day view, and you have what's called the today view. And mine was set to the today view. And the today view, in the today view, you get little cards with each event on it, and you can scroll through those cards. The list view and the day views are a little bit more like traditional views, and in those views, the trick of tapping on the today in the upper left-hand corner, the today link in the upper left-hand corner, works. That will take you to this calendar view, this month calendar view. And the hint that I was talking about that you will see is when you're in either of those views, there's a little caret, a little less than symbol, or is that greater than symbol? I always get confused. It is the less than symbol, a little arrow pointing to the left. Let's just call it a caret to make it a little bit easier on me. But you'll see that next to the word today. So it's sort of caret and then the word today. And that little caret, that little arrow is indicating that there's additional information. There is another screen that you can navigate to when you tap on that. If you are in the today view of the calendar, you will not see that little caret. So that's a little hint, and that one is kind of universal inside iOS interfaces. Very often when you see that caret, that little icon, that means there is additional information. There's an additional screen that you can access. So I thought that was a handy little tip, and thanks for sending that one in, Dave. I also received another tip about a hidden user interface element in Safari from Scott. He mentioned that when you tap on the tab icon, the two little squares on the top right corner of your iPad or the bottom right corner of your iPhone, if you press and hold on it, rather. I think I said tap earlier. If you press and hold on that little icon, up will pop up a menu that allows you to manage your tabs, your open tabs, and you will see a couple of different options. One really handy one is close all tabs. So if you've ever been in that situation where you have a lot of tabs open and you simply tap on that tab management icon and you get to the screen where you have all the little close buttons, or you can swipe to close the tabs, if you want to close them all quickly, just tap and hold on that icon and you will get a close all tabs option. You also have options for close this tab, opening up a new private tab, or adding a new tab from that screen. So that is kind of handy. But Scott's tip got me thinking, well, what other sort of hidden user interface things are in Safari? And there is a bunch of them, but I wanted to highlight a couple of them specifically in the URL bar. So, or and with the tab manager, since Scott brought up ones with the tab manager. So sticking with the tab manager for a moment, you can also, when you're in the actual tab manager, so you tap on the icon and you're in that screen where you can do the different tabs, if you're using Safari iCloud syncing, you can swipe up from there and you can see what's called iCloud tabs. And what iCloud tabs are is that for every version of Safari that you have running on a device, so your Mac, your iPad, your iOS device, it will show you the tabs that you had open in Safari on that device. And what's really cool about iCloud tabs is that you can tap on them to access the tabs that you have open in another device on your current device, but also you can swipe across those tabs to close them remotely. So if you left some tabs open on your Mac, you could actually close those from your iPad or your iPhone. And again, the way that you access those is from that tab manager screen, but you have to swipe up. So you might not notice that those tabs are down there. So that's a little bit of a hidden interface. I think on some devices, it does peak up a little bit, so you kind of do get a little bit of a hint, but it's not always readily apparent. So now moving to some of those URL bar hidden interface icons, the reload icon. If you tap and hold on the reload icon, you will get options to request a desktop version of a website that you might be on your iOS device. And if you're using a content blocker, a third-party content blocking plugin, you'll also see the option to reload that page without the content blocker activated, because sometimes content blockers can interfere with the content that you're trying to get to, or more often these days, I'm seeing websites that will restrict you or block you from even getting to their content if you're using a content blocker, which is super annoying, but you may need to toggle that off. And so tapping and holding on that reload icon will give you those options. Another thing that I like a lot in Safari is the reader view. That's when you tap on the little icon on the left of the URL bar that has three lines that gives you a distraction-free text-only view of the page that you're on. Great for reading articles. So if you're on a site and it has articles, I use that constantly, to the point where I really like to have that be the default view on a number of my favorite websites. And to set that in iOS, if you tap and hold on the reader view icon, you will get the option to set reader view as the permanent view for just that website, or you can set it for all websites, and you can toggle that on and off using that trick. Another cool little thing that you can do in Safari is tap and hold on the forward or back icons, and that will pop up a history list. So if you want to see the history of the sites that you went to. And then finally, the last little hidden UI trick I'll give you for Safari is if you have a device that supports 3D touch, using the peek and pop options on links that you might find on a page. And what I mean by peek and pop is peek is when you press with 3D touch down one level and you get the sort of one-click taptic feedback. That is peek. And then when you push harder after peeking on something, that's when you can get it to pop open. And with links, what you can do is you can press one level down, do a peek to get a preview of that link. And if you swipe up when you're in that peek mode, you also get some additional options like open to open the page, open in a new tab, copy if you want to copy the URL for that page, adding it to the reading list, or getting to the share options. And then if you press even harder to pop it, it will actually open up the link. So you can peek and then pop if you want to open that link. Peek to preview it and then pop to open it up all the way. And so there you go. There are some tips and tricks, little hidden UI elements for Safari on iOS. But with that, I think that is going to do it for the MacCast for this week. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one more show sponsor, and that is Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You can find them at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, or you just want to send me a review, comment, whatever it might be, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline, that phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, you can check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And finally, if you'd like to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.